service to the assembled devotees. All those Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, Text Number 2. Yadrupam yadadhishthanam yadasrishtamidam prabho yasamstam yadparam yaccha Tattvatvam vadatattvatah Yadrupam yad adhishthanam Yatasrishtamidam prabho Yatsamstam yatparam yaccha Tattvatvam vadatattvatah Yadrupam yadadhishthanam yadasrishtamidam prabho yasamsam yatparam yaccha tattattvam vadatattvatah. Yadrupam yadadhishthanam
Symptoms of manifestation.
Yet, what? Adhishthanam, background. Yataha, from where? Srishtam, created. Idam, this world. Prabho,
oh
my father. Yet,
in which?
Samstam,
conserved.
Yet,
what?
Param,
under control.
Yet,
what are?
Cha
and
tat
of this.
Tattvam,
the symptoms.
Vada,
please describe.
Tattvadaha,
factually.
Translation.
My dear father, please describe
factually
the symptoms of this manifest world.
What is its background?
How is it created?
How is it conserved?
and under whose control is all this being done?
Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada.
The inquiries by Narada Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect appear very reasonable. The atheist, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. The manifested world, as well as the spirit soul, is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge. Although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narada Muni wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth and not by theories. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the supreme soul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man: the living beings, the manifested world, and the ultimate control over them. The intelligent man can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations of chance. The symmetry of creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggests the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
The chapter itself is titled The Cause of All Causes. Why? Because here onwards, Srila Sukadeva Goswami is going to narrate creation, different aspects of material creation. And Maharaj Parikshit would like to know about material creation, and Srila Sukadeva Goswami quotes the conversation between Narada Muni and Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the secondary creator, is the engineer of the whole material creation, and particularly this universe. And Narada Muni is his son as well as disciple. So in that capacity, Narada Muni is questioning his father about the creation. And as the purport suggests, these questions are reasonable and they are inquiries of any intelligent being. Here, these questions, in one sense, looks like questions by some children. Many times, when we were kids, we go to our parents and ask many questions. And some of them are very reasonable, and they may not have any answer. One may wonder, as kids, where am I coming from? We go to our parents, or go to mother, father, and ask, where am I coming from? What is my source? Then they have to create a story to satisfy our minds. They cannot tell the reality because we are not mature enough to understand the fact behind. They'll say, God gave you, God gave us. We got you from somewhere. Like that you came from your mother. Just like that, just gives an answer which are just to satisfy our minds. In one sense, kind of distraction from the reality. And if we inquire questions which are far beyond, then even our parents can get concerned. Why is he talking like this? He is talking like an elderly person. Not now. You have time. One time I remember, I went to my mother and I asked, look, everyone is dying in this world. We can see everyone is dying. Because I even as a kid, it happened that I have been to different, you know, death ceremonies, different rituals. I have seen dead bodies. As a kid, I was paying obeisances, circumambulating the dead body and paying obeisances and coming back. And as a small kid. So, after I grew up, a few years later, I asked, so I see that everyone is dying. So, what is the whole point? What are we trying to achieve? Because, anyway, we are going to die. So, what is the whole point? Mother became very upset. Why are you speaking like this? There is no meaning to life if you speak like this. No, don't think like this. You know, you forget this. So this is some kind of answer which is distracting from the realities of life. Because they want to distract us from the realities, from the factualities. Because otherwise it is impossible to live a peaceful material life. So distractions are the prime feature of material existence. Distractions from the realities. Distractions from the big questions. So if we ask about who is the creator of this world, who is maintaining this world, where the life is coming from, these questions are big questions and they do not have any proper answers from materialistic people. So they try to distract by giving some answers. That's the way it is. So now also, there's not much difference. The parents, they try to distract us, and still parents would distract, because that's the way it is, from big questions, because they don't have the answer, or we are not matured enough to understand. So if you pour the same principle into the current world, and if you pour this to the current modern educated scientific world, it remains the same. They also do not have any answer. They give something to satisfy for some time. To give some, you know, just like if somebody, a kid is crying so much, give something, give a toy. And with that toy, be satisfied for some time. In the same way, scientists also give some answers to keep the society peaceful, the masses peaceful. You are crying for answers? Okay, we will give you some answers. Be satisfied, don't cry. So this is the policy of the scientific world. There is not much of a difference. And it is very interesting that Srila Prabhupada is rejecting. In fact, Srila Prabhupada is smashing all these theories with just two sentences in this purport. It's amazing how Srila Prabhupada so brilliantly presenting this argument. Srila Prabhupada is saying, the atheist, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. See, how wonderful statement it is. Without any touch of cause and effect. With this, just this phrase, practically all the modern scientific theories which are trying to answer big questions could be rejected. Because there is no presentation of factual cause. We can see the effects, but they cannot correlate to any cause. So Srila Prabhupada, this sentence is very profound. So even the statements of the most intelligent people of this world could be rejected with this one phrase. Srila Prabhupada continues, the manifested world as well as the spirit soul is still unexplained by the godless atheists through the medium of experimental knowledge, although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Srila Prabhupada is addressing two issues. One is about the world and also about the spirit soul. And Srila Prabhupada says that both are unanswered. Even though so much of scientific theories and knowledge based on experimentation, still these questions remain unanswered. I thought we would look into a few theories which are presented by the modern scientists and see where are they at this point of time. First one that everyone knows, what is the creation, what is the cause of creation, how the creation happened? Everyone has an answer. Even a small kid has an answer. It's Big Bang, that's it. I heard that even there is a TV show, right? Big Bang on Big Bang. They're presenting everything is from Big Bang. And how it happened? Big Bang is nothing but, it's very interesting. Everything is coming from singularity. And what's the definition of singularity? Infinite density, infinite gravitational force, infinite temperature, infinite pressure, and it is infinitesimal. It is too small, and it cannot, the space is zero. And it is physically unexplainable, mathematically unexplainable. Okay, how does it sound? So this is the point from where the whole creation took place, which no one can describe. And from there, okay, the whole expansion happened, then cooling down because it is infinite temperature. Can anyone manifest infinite temperature in the laboratory? It is impossible. Infinite temperature. And infinite density. In space zero, we had to manifest everything. It is impossible. So they say, okay, this is the most accepted theory. They're right. This is the most accepted theory, so you must also accept. This is propaganda, right? This is the most popular stuff, so you also accept. Okay, there are other theories too. Another one is Big Bounce. Okay, Big Bang is finished, now Big Bounce. Big Bounce explains that, okay, there is a Big Bang for creation, and after that there's a big crunch. So the created universe at one point of time would die by a crunch and it is finished. And that would cause another creation. So the universes are being created and destroyed. So this is Big Bounce. And they say, well, no, this is more a hypothetical theory. It is hypothesis. Whereas when it comes to Big Bang, they say it is more accepted theory. There's no proof. There's no evidence. But since people do accept, okay, this is an accepted theory. Whereas Big Bounce, it is equally valid in terms of hypothesis, but it is not accepted widely, so that is rejected. Then there is another theory, that is multiverse, saying that this is one among the millions of universes. But is there any evidence of other universes? No, we don't know. But this is one among the millions of universes where this happened to be the place for the existence of life. So these are different theories. And they do say, they cannot say 100% whether this is true. No, they don't say it is 100% true. But by scientific propaganda, it is propaganda, it is scientific propaganda, people do believe that these are facts. And it is presented as factual realities. Without any real authority. And we can reject, we can object all these theories just by the statement of Srila Prabhupada. Point number one, Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport that there are many theories but there is no clear-cut answer. Can anyone say factually this is the way the universe is created? Can any scientist claim for that? Answer is no. No one can. So Srila Prabhupada says, this is nothing but post-dated check. Post-dated blank check. Srila Prabhupada says, we don't want post-dated blank check. Any problem? Yes, we have solution. When? In the future. These are big questions. So, can you see now? iPads are there, iPhones are there, internet is there, you can travel so fast. So you must believe that we can come up to the stage where we can answer all these big questions. Can you? There is difference between technology and science. technology is nothing but conveniences. Whereas science is explaining the, or supposed to explain the factual reality, which they have failed. Even Srila Prabhupada said, even the actual technology is parampara. Have you heard the statement? Srila Prabhupada said, the real technology means parampara. How is that? Prabhupada said, technology means you have a problem. Say, I have, you know, throat is not good, I can't speak very loudly, so the sound is good. This microphone is amplifying, which is very good. Or if there are many more people, then we can't speak loud enough anyway. So we have a solution for that. That is technology. So material problem, solution, and that is known as technology. So technology means problem to, sorry, solution to our material problems. And Prabhupada said, okay, what are the big problems? That is birth, death, disease, old age. And what is the solution for that? There is no permanent solution. So the real technology means parampara, because parampara has the solution to all these problems. So Prabhupada said, parampara is the real technology. So see, so technology means actually that is parampara. And when it is come to science, we can see that is also parampara, because who else can give factual answer than the Lord himself through the parampara? Here Lord Brahmaji would give answer to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni as a submissive student is inquiring from his father. See, so that is the first one, that is too many theories but no answer. Second, these theories and these scientists, they do blind people by presenting arguments which are not factual. They say everything expanded, everything happened according to the laws of material nature. The laws of material nature is at work. Everything, the physical laws, everything is happening according to the physical laws, according to the mechanistic laws. But what is the reality? These laws are not cause. These laws are nothing but descriptions of what is happening in the physical world. It is record of what is happening in the physical world, but it cannot act as a cause. It doesn't have any power. The law is a law. Theory is a theory. It doesn't have any power to enact, to animate anything. So it is record of what is happening. So the cause is again missing. Then if we ask, what is the cause for the singularity or big bounce? There is no answer to this. And ultimately, if we ask this question, then it is completely beyond. What is the reason behind this creation? What is the intention behind this creation? What is the purpose of this creation? If we ask this question, then there is no answer at all. That is the end of the story. So this is where we are at. And now this is, you know, this is year 2013. We are going to 2014. There is a book published in this year based on scientific studies, and they are addressing top 20 unanswered questions by the scientists. Top 20 questions, because there are maybe millions of questions or infinite questions. They have picked top 20 questions and they are presenting, okay, these are the top 20 questions which have no answer from the scientific perspective. I'll just read the first five for our information. Okay, it's interesting. First one, what is the universe made of? First question, it is considered very, very significant question. What is universe made of? Does anyone know? From a scientific background? Not from Bhagavad Gita verse. Does anyone know? Somebody said yes. Eh? What is that? Atoms. Okay, potentially atoms, electrons. But they say that even if they count these atoms and electrons and whatever, or subatomic particles, it is account for only 5% of the total matter. 5%. The other 95% is classified as dark matter. Don't know. So they say, this is the first question. What is this universe made of? This is the top question. Don't know. No answer to this. And we can say, Bhumira, Panala, Vayu. And if you want to go deeper, we can give the 16 elements, right, from the Krishna conscious perspective. If, even if you want to go even further deeper, what is that? Okay, we remove 16 elements. In the few verses back, Shukadeva Goswami said, Shodashatmaka, right? Shodasha, Shodashatmaka. The 16 elements. So if you go even deeper than that, what is that element actually creates this material world? Na Mahatata, even basis of Mahatata. Three modes of material nature. Well, that is the basis. Even of Mahatattva, even for Pradhan, that is the basis. So we can go, from a Krishna conscious perspective, we can go to the root of material creation. Where this world is made of, we can understand. It is from the three modes of material nature. Even scientifically, they may not accept, still, it is equally valid as atoms and electrons. Because we can see the three modes of material nature in action. We can see the effects. Second question. How did life begin? Then we actually assume that we all know, or science knows everything. Biology knows everything. But they really say, how did life begin? They don't know. This is an unanswered question. See, this is an unanswered question. The book is published this year, not in previous years. Third. Are we alone in the universe? Interesting, right? Are we alone in the universe? They don't know. There is so much of studies in an extraterrestrial life. But they don't know. People have seen UFOs. Even one of the American presidents made the statement that it factually exists. After his presidency. Not during his presidency. After his presidency, he made the statement that indeed, UFOs exist. So, are we alone in this universe? And for us, no problem. What is the Krishna conscious point of view of this? Yes, of course. We have life. We know there is life everywhere. Jiva is sarvagata. And in all planets, life is there. So, we don't have much of a problem with life apart from this earth. And we are not actually too much concerned about, carbon-based life. That is one of the concerns about the scientists. That is, life means it has to be carbon-based, because our body is carbon-based and everything is carbon-based. So, in fact, from a Krishna conscious point of view, the life can exist even if there is no carbon. We know the demigod planets, they have subtle bodies which are not carbon-based. Fourth question. It is very important, very interesting too. What makes us human? Question mark. Because they say it is evolution and people hang on to DNA structure so much, but they are saying that what actually makes us humans? The reason is, they say, compared to genome of a chimpanzee and a human being, you know how much percent similarity is there? Any guess? No, 99%. 99%. Okay, if the genome can tell all the answers, it can actually unlock all the mysteries of life, there is a similarity of 99% between a chimpanzee and a human being. Yet, they are not the same. Right? They are not the same. They are different. Now, more interestingly, if you compare a banana, okay, banana and human being, there is 50% similarity in the genome. So how could you explain this fact? 50% similarity. This is like mind-boggling. They're thinking, how this could happen? So if you want to answer in this level, in the gene level, actually there is no answer. So what is this significance of human beings? Isn't it interesting in terms of Krishna conscious perspective? We have the answer. What is the significance of human beings? What is that? Higher intelligence, that's right. We can inquire into the absolute. Adhado Brahma Jigyasa. So, Brahmaji, even though had thrown extra passion, rajas, into the human beings, that is there, that part is there. Because from the animals, from which were four-legged, when we started up, when we became two-legged, Brahmaji gave actually extra passion. So, in the creation of human beings, that extra passion is manifested as scientific theories, speculation. And it is manifested as skyscrapers. It has manifested as machinery. Can you see the extra passion? And people want to do so many things, being passionate. That is there. But we are awarded with higher intelligence. And finally, the fifth one. This will actually support our this paragraph of Srila Prabhupada's purport. What is consciousness? Question mark. What is consciousness? Don't know. What is the basis of consciousness? It is unknown. So this is just five questions. Then there are many other questions. But these five big questions, they classify as the biggest problems of the science. Srila Prabhupada says there are problems in this purport. Because they cannot present any cause behind. Since there is no cause, they have to speculate in so many different ways. So we can try to appreciate Srila Prabhupada's statements. Just a sentence of Srila Prabhupada can factually refute practically millions of writings of the so-called intelligent men of this world. And also, we can understand that when we present Krishna conscious philosophy, we don't have to be defensive. Usually, our approach is being defensive. Because if someone attacks, we take a position just to defend. But Srila Prabhupada was not just defensive. He was, you know, he was just, one sense, aggressive. He was attacking. Sometimes it is necessary, and we can do only if we have factual conviction on Shastra. Actually speaking, we don't need any of these scientific evidences. We don't need the book published recently. We don't need any of these things. We need just Shastra. We need just enough to have faith in Srila Prabhupada's word. That is sufficient. But when we present the other side of the story, it can help us to have more faith in the Shastra. And we can present with more conviction. So here, Narada Muni is addressing his father and spiritual master, Brahmaji, to present what is the background of this creation? How is it created? How is it conserved? And who is in control? See, the Prabhupada says these are reasonable questions for any intelligent being, because if we are in this world, we can see ourselves, the living beings, and we can see the material creation, and also we can see somebody who is in control. This is logic, this is reality. So Narada's question is factual and it is logical. And Brahmaji would answer in due course of time. Here, Narada Muni is giving an example to show how to inquire to the spiritual master, to other senior Vaishnavas. Because that is the only way we can understand higher principles in Krishna consciousness. And also, discussing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness would help us to preach Krishna consciousness, because that is our family business. Srila Prabhupada said our family business is preaching. So for that we need to discuss. Srila Prabhupada's morning walk conversations were practically discussions, question answers, and he was smashing the so-called atheistic arguments. Even in our parampara, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he used to ask questions to himself. Right? He was in his home. If you go in that veranda outside, he used to walk back and forth. And he was posing questions to himself, and he would answer those questions, because he was preparing himself to face the atheistic people. So they would formulate many questions within, and they would answer. Same with Bhaktisiddhanta, they would formulate possible objections to Krishna conscious philosophy and they would answer those questions. So this is the way even for us to prepare ourselves for preaching. That is, okay, these are the possible objections. And how are you going to answer these questions? It is relevant. Next point, very interesting, is it shows the completeness of spiritual knowledge. Because transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the super soul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. Can anyone remember a verse from Bhagavad Gita that tells this knowledge, this point? Question. That spiritual knowledge, it includes the material knowledge also. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the super soul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation.
Seventh chapter, that's right. Which verse is that? Exactly, second verse. Jnanantaham savijnanamitam pakshyami anya sheshataha yajnatva nehabhuyo anya jnatavyam avashishyate.
So Krishna says, this has two aspects. The knowledge I am giving you, both it is phenomenal and noumenal. So phenomenal is referring to the material world, the material knowledge. Whereas the noumenal knowledge is referring to the spiritual knowledge. So Krishna's presentation is not just spiritual. Spiritual includes its secondary aspect, that is material knowledge. So matter is considered only dhitiya. Dhitiya means secondary. Dhitiya, the matter is addressed, referred as dhitiya. That in itself shows that there is something primary, and that is spiritual knowledge. So spiritual knowledge includes both. And Bhagavatam, as a Mahapuran, presents creation also. It gives full understanding about matter also. So it is not just a spiritual knowledge, but matter is included. That is a very important point. And finally, Srila Prabhupada makes a very concluding statement that the symmetry of creation and regulative actions and reactions suggests the plan of an intelligent brain behind them. See, now there is this theory of intelligent design, right? But who is the actual presenter of intelligent design? Srila Prabhupada. Actually, see the exact term Prabhupada used. Okay, there is an intelligent brain behind this. The presenter, original presenter of this theory is Srila Prabhupada. In his book, we can see. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. We have to go to an authority. Even if we want help spiritually, we want to go to an authority who can help. In any terms, even in our personal difficulties, if we want a spiritual solution to our problems, we have to go to a person who can help. Otherwise, there is no point. It is a waste of time. It is said, if you are begging, you have to beg from a person who has some money. Otherwise, begging is useless. In the same way, if you want to solve our problems, maybe philosophical or practical, we need to approach a person who can actually help. So it applies to when we take guidance also. We have to approach a person who can actually give us a solution, who is actually solved that problem or working on that problem, who can give some insight into the solution. Otherwise, we are trapped. There's no point, okay, answering, you know, we have problems. We are just asking everyone. Some people are there. They may be facing some difficulties in their Krishna consciousness. They would try to ask everyone. Whoever you find, they will ask this question. And why do they ask this question? Because they need some kind of an answer which they are looking for. So, until they get that answer, they would search after people who can give that answer. You see? So, that's not the proper way. It is not the right way. Right way is to approach a person who has an answer, who knows, is qualified, get the answer and apply in our life. That's the real way. So, with this, I conclude this purport. And today is the appearance of Nimbarkacharya. So, I would like to speak briefly about Nimbarkacharya, who is one of the prominent Acharya of Kumara Sampradaya. As we know, there are four Vaishnava Sampradayas. And of one of them is Nimbarka Sampradaya or Kumara Sampradaya, originating from four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar. So, it is the history of Nimbarkacharya is pretty much unknown. Only a few statements are there. So, we can briefly present about Nimbarkacharya. It is said that exact birth date is unknown. At the same time, he appeared around 300 years before Mahaprabhu. That is known. And he appeared in South India. And from there, he went to Navadvip. So this is mentioned in the Navadvip Mahatmya. That Nimbarkacharya, he went to Navadvip and he was a Shiva Bhakta. And he went along a group of Brahmanas and he started performing austerities in a billow one, where all the billua trees are there. So there, he was doing different austerities, and primarily it was worship of Lord Shiva by offering these kind of bilwa leaves. He would, just like we offer tulsi leaves to Krishna, he was offering bilwa leaves to Lord Shiva. And with this, he satisfied Lord Shiva. So, Nimbarkacharya, he was a Shiva Bhakta and he pleased Shiva so much so that Shiva personally appeared in front of him. And then he told Nimbarkacharya, you go to a forest nearby and there you will find these four Kumaras performing austerities and meditating. So you approach them, please them and take initiation from them. So Nimbarka, he was very happy because he got the darshan of his worshipable deity, Lord Shiva. From there he went to this forest, a bale forest, and there he was searching after these four Kumaras, but he couldn't find. With great determination, he moved around and finally he could get the audience of the four Kumaras. And they were effulgent and they were just five-year-old boys. And they were naked and they were sitting, four of them. And seeing them, Nimbarkacharya became so happy. However, their eyes were closed. It is mentioned that Nimbarkacharya, suddenly he exclaimed, Hare Krishna. He just said, Hare Krishna, loudly. When it happened automatically. When these four Kumaras heard this word, you know, Hare Krishna, they opened their eyes and they saw Nimbarka. And they asked, who are you? How are you come? Where are you coming from? Then Nimbarka replied, and Sanat Kumar and all the Kumaras embraced Nimbarkacharya. Then Sanat Kumar instructed Nimbarkacharya. He said, you study Sanat Kumar Samhita. And then he initiated Nimbarkacharya into the worship of Radha and Krishna and gave him the mantra, Radha Krishna mantra was given to him. After that, he said, okay, now you go again in the same Navadvip area, you perform austerities by worshipping Radha and Krishna. So Nimbarkacharya, in the same forest, he started worshipping Radha and Krishna. So when he was performing Radha and Krishna personally appeared in front of Nimbarkacharya. And Radha and Krishna, they said, in the future, I am going to appear to propagate Krishna consciousness. And I bless you that you also preach Krishna consciousness. You travel and you preach. And he said, since you have performed austerities in Navadvip, I will show you my form, which would appear in the world in a few hundred years later. And Radha and Krishna combined and they showed the form of Mahaprabhu. So Nimbarkacharya got the darshan of Mahaprabhu. So there is an interesting statement that actually all the four acharyas got the mercy of Mahaprabhu to propagate Krishna consciousness. So this is the incident where we can see how Nimbarkacharya got the mercy of Mahaprabhu and he embarked upon his journey in preaching Krishna consciousness, and he traveled and he preached Krishna consciousness. So in the Nimbarka Sampradaya, the two important teachings are present, and Mahaprabhu glorified these two teachings. One is the supremeost position of Srimati Radharani, and the second, worship of Krishna in the mood of gopis in Vrindavan. So these are in Ragamarg. So these are the two essential aspects of Nimbarka Sampradaya, which are very much present in our Sampradaya also. When Mahaprabhu gave the audience to Nimbarkacharya, he said, you will also appear in my pastimes. He said, you will take birth as a great pundit in Kashmir. And you will travel around India defeating different scholars. And finally, you will come to Navadvip. In Mayapur, you will get my audience again as Nimai Pandit. And who is this? Keshav Kashmiri. So Keshav Kashmiri is none other than Nimbarkacharya. So he appeared and then he said, you will get defeated by me, but by the mercy of Saraswati Devi, you will understand my real identity. And after that, you will get, you know, after that life, you will go back home, back to Godhead, to Golok Vrindavan. So he got that blessings as well. From that point, Nimrakacharya became completely jubilant, having got the darshan of Radha Krishna, Lord Shiva, his spiritual masters, and Gauranga Mahaprabhu himself, and he traveled and preached Krishna consciousness. He was such a powerful preacher that one time when he was in Vrindavan, again he was in a Nimba forest, and he was living, and one Jain scholar came and started arguing with Nimbakacharya. So he defeated this Jain Pandit in arguments, and he said, "Now you must accept my hospitality. You come my home and accept some prasad." However, this Jain said, "No, I won't, because sun has already set, so I can't eat anything." So Nimbakacharya, by his power, he brought sun from a Nimba tree. So it is said, we don't know exactly his name, previous name. It is that the name Nimbarka is coming from Nimba. It's a Nimba tree, and Arka. Arka means sun. So he is known as Nimbarka or Nimbaditya, because he could produce sun from a Nimba tree. And then the Jain Pandit completely accepted defeat, and he accepted prasadam also. So he got the mercy. So that is a very powerful personality. So even in Vrindavan still there are followers of Nimbakacharya. Then I will speak a little bit on Tulasi and Saligram. We can see here Tulasi and Saligram are together. It's the Tulasi Saligram Vivah day. So their marriage. So a brief pastime I would describe in a few minutes, because we don't have a lot of time. The appearance of Tulasi Devi in the material world, and that of how the Lord became a Shila. So in few sentences I would explain. So Tulasi Devi took birth in the material world, and she, there is a mention in Brahma Vaivarta Purana that she appeared as the daughter of Dharmadvaja. Dharmadvaja. And she grew up as a beautiful girl, and she was not growing beyond 15 years. And she was so beautiful, and they gave the name Tulasi. And the name, the word meaning of Tulasi is Tula means to match, to weigh, right? Tulasi means matchless. No one can match with Tulasi. So she got the name as Tulasi. And that time, when she was 15, she had her desire that she should get Lord Narayan, Krishna, as her husband. So she went into the forest and started performing austerities. So when she performed austerities, Lord Brahma appeared in front of her. And Lord Brahma said that, "Okay, I can give you the blessings that you can get Lord Krishna as your husband. However, there is an issue. There is one demon who is also from originally from the spiritual world, Sudam. He is performing austerities. He is Shangachuda. Shangachuda is performing austerities to get you as his wife. So I have to satisfy both the desires." So he said, "You continue performing your austerities. You will be the wife of Shangachuda for some time. But after his departure, you will get Lord Vishnu as your husband." So Tulasi said, "Okay, what can you do?" Then Shangachuda also got the blessings that, okay, she would get, Shangachuda is a demon, Asura. She would get Tulasi as her wife. So Shangachuda came to this forest, and he was looking for Tulasi, and he found Tulasi. And then when they were conversing, Lord Brahma came and said, "You get married." So they got married. And Tulasi, as a chaste wife, served Shangachuda, and this was going on. And Shangachuda had a benediction that no one can kill Shangachuda as far as his wife remains chaste. So Shangachuda became very happy, because Tulasi Devi is so chaste, and her chastity cannot be checked at any cost. So Shangachuda took this opportunity, and he started disturbing the whole universe. He was creating troubles to demigods. He was creating troubles to brahmanas. He was creating a havoc. And he was going on and on. And one time, he even started fighting with Lord Shiva. And even Lord Shiva couldn't defeat. Though the fight was continuing, and Lord Shiva couldn't defeat Shangachuda. So fight is now also going on. So Lord Vishnu thought, "What to do? I had to do something." So he came as a Brahmin boy and went in front of Shankachuda and said, "I beg alms, please give your kavacha as charity." So Shankachuda, he was a, you know, he has a donation. He immediately gave, he took his kavacha and gave to Vishnu. And he took the kavach and then he disguised himself as Shankachuda. He wore this kavach and he took the form of Shankachuda and went to Tulsi Devi and they started to enjoy with Tulsi Devi. At that point, Lord Shiva killed Shankachuda. But Tulsi Devi could understand what exactly happened. He understood, okay, Lord Vishnu has cheated me. He has disguised. So he came as my husband and cheated me, deceived me. So Lord Tulsi Devi cursed Lord Vishnu. And the curse was, since you acted as a hard-hearted man, just like a stone, your heart is just like a stone, so you be a stone. So this is Lord Krishna, is Lord Vishnu, you know. So he accepted the curse and he said, but you wanted me as your husband. And also, there is nothing wrong for Lord Vishnu to enjoy Tulsi Devi because Tulsi Devi is a plenary portion of Lakshmi Devi. So there is nothing wrong. Actually, Shankachuda is the thief. Tulsi Devi, sorry, Lord Vishnu is not the thief. Shankachuda wanted to enjoy Tulsi Devi. Okay, that is a thievery. Because that is actually, Tulsi Devi belongs to Lord Vishnu. So Lord said, okay, but I will accept your curse. So they said, now what we can do is, you quit your body. When you quit your body, you will become Gandhavi River. In Nepal, the Gandhavi River is there. And I will become stone to fulfill your curse. And we will be together. So you can see the saligrams in Gandhavi River. Because that is Lord Vishnu and Tulsi Devi are together. So that is their wedding. That is their marriage. They are always together. So that is the pastime. Why? How? First of all, Lord Vishnu is in the form of saligram, and also Tulsi Devi, how Tulsi Devi is so dear and how they are present as the river in Nepal. So now also we get so many saligram shilas from there. So we can see even Goswamis, they went to Gandhavi to collect saligrams. Even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he sent his disciples and he went personally also to collect so many saligram shilas to establish temples throughout India. So we can see how powerful it is. It is also mentioned that if there is a saligram shila worshipped 24 miles around, is considered holy place. So here we have the saligram shilas, 12 shilas, that is considered even more auspicious. So at 24 miles around is auspicious place. And finally, I'll make one more point. That is, this is also very auspicious because it is Kartik Purnima. And this is the full moon night where Krishna performs his rasa dance. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that the verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that gives an introduction to rasa leela is starting from Bhagavan Api. And Srila Prabhupada explains this in Krishna book also. Bhagavan Api means even though Krishna is Bhagavan, even though he is completely self-satisfied, still when he found this Purnima, when he found this beautiful flowers and beautiful breeze, he wanted to enjoy with his devotees. So he is not giving up his position as Bhagavan. So materialistic people can think that this Rasa Krida is a material activity. But to correct, Srila Prabhupada says, he never leaves his position. He always maintains his position as the Supreme Lord. And the activity of the Rasa Leela is nothing but the top exchange of bhakti. So it's an interaction between the Lord and his devotees. So we have to understand in this way. So with this, I conclude today and see if there any quick questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Just an update about the scientific theories about the universe.
Yeah.
This year, it's been released another theory that the fact that the universe is expanding.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so, like in a couple of years, maybe we'll discover that there's no actually Big Bang.
Yeah, that is the beauty. So, so if you want PhDs, if you want even Nobel Prize, one can get. And after some time, one can write a thesis proving something. And after 2 years, you write another thesis disproving that, you will also get a PhD. That's the fact. That's the reality. So they say this is the development of science. We have to see this as development. There is a theory called pessimistic meta-induction. This is a scientific, it's the philosophy of science. It is a pessimistic meta-induction. That says that it's pessimistic. It's a scientific theory. Pessimistic. That the theory in itself is pessimistic. So pessimistic meta-induction says that every theory has to be wrong. Yeah. Because it has to be some element which is not correct so that you get something more. So it's an induction. It's an inductive procedure. It's an inductive procedure. So no theory is correct. That is the fact. It is an accepted theory too. So that also should be wrong, right? So it is pretty logical. Yes, it's funny. Yes, Prabhu. That is pessimistic meta-induction.
I'm interested, why we are not bothering for the carbon, you say this, we are not bothering for the carbon environment, this thing.
Yeah.
Because it's a very serious issue, because you say it has the potential for this global...
No, you didn't understand the point I'm making. You are worried about the environment as an environmental, whatever you are doing. You are worried about that. But what I mean... The point I'm making is, we are not bothered about the carbon for life. Not in this world, in the outside world. In this life, we are dependent. So, we treat Mother Earth as Mother. So, we respect Mother. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yes. Okay.
Just about the past time that you just told about this morning.
Yeah. The Lord says that my symbols will be present in the shilas, like chakra. You know, we can see here also, if you observe the shilas, we can see Krishna shila. If you see Gopal, we can see hoof print. Gopal's which side? This side you can see one. Just thinking. Okay, this side. You can see on top of his eyes, you can see a hoof print very clearly. Ananta looks like, you know, Haigriva looks like really a horse. If you see photos, if you go close, you can see really like Kurma looks like Kurma. Marcia looks like Marcia. You know, it's very, Ananta looks like Ananta. So, the Lord is present, yeah? Which living entities? I don't know.
They are the one which carves the shapes.
Yeah.
Make the shapes into the Shalivakshila to give particular pastimes. And so it's not the silas that is just wrong, but these kitas go and carve. So only those shilas are worship. That's what I mean, the pastimes.
I don't know if anyone knows. Yeah, I can speak a little bit about it.
Yeah. Then, and Krishna
Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.